and welcome to CMU Booked, Carnegie Mellon's official book podcast, where we actually read
and finish the books. Hi, I'm Sam.
And I'm Hannah. Today we are discussing All Fours by Miranda July. She's a well-known author, been in the industry for a while. She's also, fun fact, come out with some films in the past like 10 years. 2020, she came out with Kajillionaire, and then 2022, which I really loved, is Fire of Love. Really great stuff. She's very artistic as a creator, so looking forward to talking about this novel.
Yeah, I mean, artistic is definitely a good way to put it. This was my first introduction to Miranda July, and I'm a little conflicted, and I'm very excited to talk about it because this was definitely an interesting read, something I would not have picked up. What about you?
Word to that.
Yeah.
I also, this is not something that I would usually pick up. I thought that it brought up some interesting themes and questions about relationships and modernity, but I agree. Definitely mixed on what the message is.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll get into more of that.
Anyways, we're going to be bringing it back to a very special guest, Miss Jennifer Bortner. So let's get into it.
Enjoy, team.
Jen, welcome back. You were on the very first episode of Booked, and now you're officially our first OG returning guest. How does it feel?
Feels really nice. It's been like, I feel like I'm low-key part of the podcast family just because I was with Dylan in this room when she set it up. And seeing you guys take it over has been really awesome.
So tell us a little bit about what you studied. Give us a little refresher.
So my name is Jennifer Bortner. I am a senior in literature and culture and global studies at CMU. And like, I'm kind of obsessed with this book now that I've just finished it. And I'm so excited to talk. Literally 2 seconds before I entered this room, but you know.
I love it. And should we do our cultural consumption of the week? Like, what have you been reading? What have you been watching?
I'm currently reading, and have been for a while, but I'm in love with it. It's a translation from Portuguese called Crooked Plow from a Brazilian author. Can't fully pronounce his name. It's like Itamar something Jr. But it's a phenomenal book about a group of farmers in the poorest region of Brazil. And this traumatic event that totally shapes the community and the family's life.
Wow. Okay, well, I'll have to get into that.
How about you, babe? What have you been watching, reading?
Like, is it beating a dead horse if I say that I'm still watching Severance?
No.
Two episodes left. Yeah, I'm just being honest, guys. But also, what shook me to my core this past week was watching Jake Gyllenhaal and Emmy Rossum in The Day After Tomorrow, which we watched for Jeffrey Hinkleman's sci-fi class.
I love that movie.
So good. I'm sorry. I'm sure other people have completely different opinions, but I just love Emmy Rossum.
I do like Emmy Rossum.
She's the best. So I was kind of obsessed with that. And did not talk about it enough in class. Like, I need to keep talking about it. What about you, Hannah?
I'm comfort watching some episodes of Law & Order Special Victims Unit mixed with Great British Bake Off. But for school, I read Sin City, The Hard Goodbye, and then I watched the first Sin City movie. That's how I feel about it. But, you know. Keeps you busy during the week. So yeah, that's what's going on. But I guess just to jump right into this very
weird,
steamy novel, I was just sort of interested, Jen, in talking about, like, you're very versed in, like, literary fiction in general. And so I was just sort of wondering, like, how does this compare within, like, the plethora of stuff that you've sort of consumed, your tastes, you know, what you like and dislike style-wise and also narratively?
That is a fantastic question because I was just thinking about this. So I feel like a lot of the books I read nowadays that are, like, kind of in this vein of, like, a woman. When I started the column at the Tartan Novelty, my first column was about disaster girl fiction, so I was really into it, like a Tessa Moshfegh, Death in Her Hands, just kind of this woman having a crisis and kind of ruining the rest of her life in some kind of way, or just having a really deep moment. But those books tend to go in two directions, I find. One is really sparse language, so it feels like kind of not like emotional, but like there's a distance, like from sentence to sentence. They're usually quite short and like punctuated, or super lyrical and poetic, like really getting into like almost purpley prose about the life kind of unfolding in the story. I think this book hits an interesting kind of middle ground mm-hmm. where I feel very connected to the protagonist. And I think the writing is very, at times, super descriptive. But it's not like, I would never call it lyrical or beautiful. Like, there are definitely moments of like that distance between the reader and the character that I feel like kind of operates in this new section that I haven't really seen before personally.
And also to give like a quick summation of what happens in this book, based off of Jen's great description of kind of the larger themes, is that there's a woman unnamed who you're kind of supposed to insert yourself in as the main character, I feel. But basically she is having troubles in her marriage and she renovates a hotel, has a hotel room, has a sort of cheating relationship with this younger man. And
an emotional affair.
An affair without sex.
Right, right. Arguably. What are we defining as sex is the question.
There are sexual acts that
yes.
happen,
yeah,
I would argue.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, we're just going through her thoughts about life and marriage and motherhood and a lot of different aspects.
And menopause.
And menopause is a huge thing. So like first thoughts on the book, Hannah, Jen?
I definitely, when I first started reading the novel, I went to our producer, Dylan, and I was just sort of like, I don't know how I feel about this. And then halfway through the book, I was like, okay, I'm in, I want to know what happened. And then at the end, I felt very confused, about how I felt. Not confused about what happened, very clear what happens, but I definitely confused about how I felt, just because I feel like I wrote a lot down while I was reading this book, and I sort of separated it into parts, at least. I thought that there were three parts of this novel, sort of her journey, being home, and then sort of the aftermath of
just to, like,
her
give
decision-making.
Context, maybe. Like, the book starts off where she decides to go on this road trip. And so the big portion of the first part of the book is her not actually making it on this road trip.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of act one. I think the author also separates it into four parts.
Mm.
But she has like part one, part two, part three, part four. But I honestly, for me, I agree with three parts. I don't think the fourth part really felt like a part. It was more like an epilogue.
Yeah, totally. I don't know how I felt about the protagonist herself. It's like we're in that sort of middle ground that you're talking about. Where it's like, you know, it treads this line between disaster girl fictions of these two different, you know, subsets of them. And I feel like she doesn't commit, I don't know, I didn't feel like this protagonist was a particularly committed character in any sort of way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I also felt that way. I wrote down what is the inciting incident. Also, like, I do a lot of like screenwriting and I like to study kind of story structures and I was kind of confused with this book, although I know that that's kind of a theme in these kind of like modern literature.
I actually do think there's a pretty strong inciting incident. There's two I can think of. The first is the fetal maternal hemorrhage.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is like the feeling that her baby may have been stillborn. The second I think is her husband saying there are two kinds of people, parkers and drivers. Sure. And that kind of unlocks this not insecurity, but like question that gets at her core as someone who has this like weird liminal space role, because she's a mother, a wife, she's a former sex worker, and she's a semi-famous artist.
Mm-hmm.
Like all at once, and she's also trying to be like a social person in like Los Angeles.
Right, and like for me that was just a mouthful. By the end of the novel, I didn't feel like I knew her any better than I did. Like starting out, I guess. I sort of thought that it just repeated a lot of... She doesn't change, I didn't feel. I think she changes in the fact that she finally... I mean, they communicate about things, but they don't do it in a real way. They role play, which I don't know. It's another fantasy. I just thought it was another extension of her not being able to deal with the reality that she's in. And maybe that is getting to know the character more, but I didn't feel particularly connected.
I totally understand that. And I think one of the biggest issues I had, especially towards the ending, was that they skipped the part where she ends up writing this book when she hasn't worked on a project for like seemingly like months or years, mm-hmm. In between going on this, like, you know, in between having this meeting with this famous pop star being scheduled and the end of the novel. And I feel like the actual, like, creating process would have been so interesting to see at the point in her life where she's in this new state with her husband, to see if, like, something actually was freed for her. Mm-hmm. Because that, like, the change, the shift in her, it felt a shift towards transparency, less towards, like, being a better person.
Yeah.
I felt like there was that, the chapter where she's talking to her gynecologist or OBGYN about menopause the second time. Mm-hmm. She's like, and the doctor's like, well, it doesn't have to be all bad. Like, your period stops. And then she texts, like, all of her friends, and they're like, yeah, all these good things happened to me after menopause. And this fell so flat for me.
Yeah.
Because I struggle to believe that she spent her whole life not knowing that you stop getting your period after you get menopause. But I also struggle to believe that, I mean, maybe some people don't, I don't know, but I struggle to also believe that these, like it's just, like, an aha moment. It didn't feel fully, and maybe it's because we see these, like, chat room comments and not, like, her full emotional range at the time.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel as weighty as I kind of sought it to be.
I also struggled with that. I struggled with a lot of things about this main character. I think because the way that I see it, she doesn't necessarily go through transformation. She goes through phases. Mm-hmm. At least for me, she flip-flops very heavily. And I think what you've hit on, what I was also talking about with, like, the inciting incident, you're right. It definitely does have an inciting incident. I think my problem more with it is that she has very little to do with the inciting incidents, nor with the aftermath of those. Mm-hmm. It's all, like, reactionary, but in the least active way, where she's like, I'm gonna drive away 30 minutes from home and sit out here and give away the money that would allow me to do anything differently than what I'm already doing right now.
Yeah, I think there's another great book that you're making me think of right now. It's called Practice by Rosalind Brown, which deals with the concept of the mind-body problem. This is a totally different book, but it's another girl struggling.
Sure.
She's a college student. And I think here, what's really interesting about the main character is the extent to which her, like, subconscious and her body lead her, and then her mind catches up with the consequences later. Or, like, even, like, her, like, not fully subconscious, but, like, her, she's, like, attached from the repercussions of her actions until it, like, hits her later. I think, like, seeing her drive around, like, or, like, stop at the motel and, like, watching what she's doing catch up with her actual, like, conscious mind is really interesting to me.
I mean, she even talks about, like, that. She talks about the second when a plane crashes and it hasn't hit the radio yet.
Yeah, lag time.
The lag time, yeah. So I think that you're definitely, yeah, you're right. I don't know. Maybe I'm just not used to this kind of literature, but something about that lack of action and she's just waiting for it to hit. I'm like, it just irritated me about this main character.
I don't think you're supposed to like her, though, at all.
Yeah, that's fair. Hannah, do you like her?
No. it's not that I don't like or dislike her. She's sort of like this amorphous being to me. But I don't think I understand her is the problem. Right. And I don't know if that's a generational thing, and I don't know if it's a writing thing. Because there's also something to be said about the fact that I'm a little apprehensive, you know, sort of being talked to about, you know, sort of being like, you know, someone
finger wagging, yeah.
Yeah, somebody's finger wagging at me for, like, having this notion of what infidelity is. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's personal. And I think that the book doesn't really... The book, and when we're talking about sort of the friend dynamics, where she has, you know, she speaks to them all about, you know, what are the sexual fantasies that they all have and all this and that. And then when she finally follows through on, you know, having this open marriage of sorts, she goes back to her friends and they're all, like, sort of shocked, or at least some of them are like, oh, didn't think you had it in you, you know? And she's like, but all of these people have all of these fantasies and why don't they just do it? And it's like, because it's a fantasy, you know? This is very much her experience.
You feel like it's kind of preachy?
Yeah, I think that they're preaching something that I fundamentally am at odds with. I'm at odds with the idea that somebody can cheat on their partner, come back, and that everything be okay.
I agree with that totally. I think, though, that, like, this, and maybe, like, this novel just feels super, like, of a specific artist group living in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying
It's speaking to that culture that, like, does exist and is annoying, like, actively. Like,
right.
Hearing people talk, like, you're not supposed to like her, you're not supposed to, I don't even think you're supposed to agree with her, but I think there's, like, two levels that the novel operates on. Like, one is, like, I don't actually know. Maybe you are supposed to. I don't know what. I can't speak for Miranda July.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm someone who's always had a super complicated relationship with an idea of motherhood in terms of, like, a feminist perspective. Like, I've always wanted to, like, protect my identity and my life. And I feel like I've seen so many women who lose an aspect of themselves trying to have, like, you know, trying to have, like, the 80s idea of, like, having it all. And so kind of seeing a woman actually struggle with that kind of openly on the page, even if I disagree fundamentally with most of her decisions, seeing the thought process felt a little, like, cathartic for me.
I don't think this main character was the right person to communicate those thought processes, because she has, like, for a lot of the book, she has a supporting husband who is also helping raising that child, and she has a successful career.
But it doesn't have anything to do with how much support you have. I think it's, like, you are fundamentally transformed as a person. And I think that the fact that she's a messy character, even with everything in her favor, is interesting to me. Like, even when her husband is as supporting as he could possibly be for her, when her child is, like, a gem, like an adorable gem, to an extent that's almost a little, like, too played up at some points.
Yeah.
But, like, and she has money, lots of money. This is a novel of extreme wealth. I think that, and she's still feeling like this and doing this, I think says something interesting to me. And I was excited to keep reading.
I definitely agree in the idea that, like, this is saying particular things about, like, the pressure of motherhood, sort of the expectations, which then just, like, confound you at a certain point of your life. It's like, you know, this is her midlife crisis of,
totally,
you know, holy, or earlier midlife crisis of just, like, holy fuck, like, I'm getting old. I feel an emptiness within me, even though fundamentally things are good in my life. You know, like, I understand that. I understand that on many levels. But I struggle with how forgiveness is displayed here. Mm. I don't think it's as cookie cutter. I also, like, people have different relationships. People have different versions of relationships. But I don't believe it.
I agree.
Yeah.
I don't believe it. I don't feel like it's like, I understand. We always knew the parents who you call them by their first name, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you have those people. It's like my best friends at home, like their dad had a very close relationship. You know, they treated them like adults. And there's that one point in the novel where, you know, bath time with Sam, where she's talking to Sam, her child.
Yeah. Not me.
And Sam Mahler. And, like, you know, you always talk to me like an adult. When I show, you know, like, when my friends show their parents their artwork, they're always like, how cool. You never do that. And then she, like, does it. And what is it?
The child
is like, oh, like, no, you know, make it authentic. You know, like, don't, because it's fake. And it's like, I think we're also seeing, right, these different mediums of parenting, which I thought I liked, because you don't see a lot of that sort of, like, passive parenting,
yeah,
which is also authoritative, but it's passive in the sense that, like, some parents treat you like an adult a little too early. Like, there are definitely people like that. And I think that it was interesting to see it earlier on in a child's life with Sam. I thought that was interesting and also sort of indicative of this buffer that she sort of has as a mother, I thought.
But I also feel like she feels so much for her child.
Oh, no, like, I'm not, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's a distance between them. But I do think,
Oh, no, of what, like, the ideal mother is.
Oh, I understand.
Like,
yes.
Mother, like, you know, saying how cool and, you know, being there at all times. Like, she goes, she leaves for weeks. Yeah. I know she talks about how it's so hard and whatnot. But, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying
to say. No, I totally agree. Yeah. Like, there's, I think, she, like, the, one of the things this character is doing is showing you, like, the... like the elements of this kind of cultural, the commentary that are good and bad.
Yeah.
Like these people that exist that are, you know, like contemporary parenthood, in like, you know, a openly like queer spaces in super artsy like areas where people can be kind of snobby about it, but like there are good things that are coming as well. Like I loved the part where she's talking. And I forget who she's talking with, but they mention Sam and she's like, don't you dare gender my child. And I was like, and for the first part of the book, like you don't notice you, like I, at first, especially because I started listening to this on audiobook, I didn't really notice at first the they, them pronouns for her kid. But when it came out, like toward the end, I was like, wow, like she is really like a lot of kids, especially that young. I'm assuming Sam is like somewhere between like 10 and 12 or 10.
He's gonna guess younger.
Me too.
But
I graduated second grade.
I think because Arconda says that she was shocked that the protagonist was still getting flashbacks because her child was older. So I was guessing like 10.
Maybe. Okay. Maybe, yeah. Sure.
But like a lot of people don't kind of respect their kids' choice to be non-binary at an age, or if maybe they're just treating their child absent of gender at the beginning. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a really interesting, loving, caring thing.
Yeah, I guess my only question then is, at the end, right, you're saying we're getting this sort of window into this community, this very specific, artistic, LA, pretentious, queer, very open community. And there's a lot of, you know, and we get a lot of good, but we also get
a lot of bad.
Get a lot of bad. And I think that, you know, the deconstructing of these sort of social customs and norms that they do within this community doesn't make them particularly happy or fulfilled.
Not at all.
Not at all. And through the breaking down of these social norms, does it really render them better people?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, right. Like, I think that, sure, they're more open, but then, like, I just felt personally with the cheating.
With
the fact that she is so, you know, led on by her,
what's her name? Kay, something with a K. Carly?
I can't remember.
Hold on, opening up the book.
I believe she was a butch lesbian.
Yes. Right.
And through their relationship, like, she is just strung along for the ride,
Chris.
And she doesn't take any action there. And she didn't take any action with her husband. And so I was just sort of like, okay, I'm getting a window into this sort of polyamory openness, you know, this very inclusive thing, or, you know.
Inclusive is kind of a weird word for it, because like, it isn't.
It's not. And it's also like they're fundamentally, you know, sort of
wrong things.
And they're also distanced from feeling, I think, emotions that are important to have. Jealousy, compassion, you know, self-reflection. I think that sometimes these characters really miss that. And what we're saying, like, I don't believe the reactions in this book because they, like, it's just missing that. And maybe that's a comment on, like, sort of the emptiness of their emotional stuff.
It's so hard to like pin down this author because she says so many really interesting things about all of the things that we're discussing right now, but I can't get like a clear message on whatever it is that we're discussing. What do you think about that, Ben?
Here is one of the things I was wrestling with like while reading this was, does she want us to like, how much does she want us to be okay with the ending and her decisions? And one of the things that I think is an interesting detail that she adds to color this protagonist is her family life and her parents being so screwed up, and her the history of like severe mental illness in her family. Her grandmother and her aunt both kill themselves in very like, you know, kind of gruesome ways. Like one of them throws himself out the window inside a trash bag. Trigger warning. Sorry for the audience. But her dad talks about having a walk-in personality that like doesn't care about her at all. The death field. Yeah. Absolutely. Like these are really screwed up things. And so I think that one of the things I was feeling was like, I think she doesn't want us to be okay. I think we're really just here to watch someone screwed up deal with social constraints, try to be a good parent, but not necessarily try to be a good person.
I'm so sorry.
You go.
I was just saying, I had a real issue with them giving us that context and then not explaining it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we don't get any insight into how that affects her. We're just supposed to see it. And like in a novel like this, where it's all, you know, from her perspective, I was sort of like, tell me what you think. Yeah. It's like, we're here, we're sitting here.
I feel like though we get insights, we get glimpses where she talks about like, I think I'm going to end up like this. And she says, she says at several points in the novel, like, I think I'm going to end up killing myself.
Right. Like, but it doesn't color any of her decision making.
I think it does, because I think a lot of it is with the intention of trying to find a way to like prioritize this presentness to avoid the fate of like the impending past and the impending future.
I just feel like it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I think in the past, she's already decided that she's, you know, just another version of, you know, these families, I thought. And then we're seeing her in this novel just sort of flippantly mention that, yeah, everyone has trauma.
Right.
And not everyone makes these decisions. And I didn't understand what set her apart. From other people with trauma. It's like, yeah, everyone has like really shitty family history. People have people in their family who commit suicide. People have other family who die in tragic accidents and other things. And, you know, they don't do these things. But if they did, I at least want to hear about it. You know, I at least want to know why.
That's fair.
Or understand a little bit more. Sam, yeah. What are you going to say?
No, I just also, I completely agree with that. And I struggle because of that to support, like, even be invested in the story, because I feel like I'm just watching. And I feel like that was supposed to be the opposite point of, like, having an unnamed main character was supposed to make you feel more involved in the story. And yet, because of her inaction, I felt like I was just standing by. But maybe that was just me.
I also think that like something that we also haven't really touched on a lot, but the fact that like the only way that she seems to be able to actualize any of what we're talking about is through like graphic visualizations of sex in her head, I think is also something that is interesting as a decision. I think it works sometimes, but not as like the primary. I don't know.
No, I totally see what you're saying. I think there's not a balance between the descriptiveness, between the graphicness of the sexual acts and the rest of the story. But I think, and I don't know if I agree with this choice, but I do think it's an intentional choice because this protagonist is kind of sex crazed. Like she is so, this is all she can only really think about, like, three things at a time, like her career, sex, and her child.
Yeah.
Right. And I guess what I just, like, have a problem, I mean, I don't have a problem with her necessarily for that. I do think that it reads a little bit, like, monotonous, and that every time she has a problem, she just has to go, like, masturbate about it, which is a little bit odd and off-putting for a book, but if that's her tea. Something that I wrote down and would love to talk about is I wrote down on a notepad while I was reading this, if marriage is an institution, then don't subscribe to it. Because she gets, I mean, I feel like that's a big point in this book, is that she's upset about the institution of marriage and like what women have to be in life
but
and motherhood.
Is she?
And in marriage.
Because here's my thing.
Yeah,
it works conditionally.
I think that if this protagonist had the choice, knowing what she knew, whether or not to marry Harris or just to like date him and have a child with him, she would still marry him. I think she like enjoys the like on paper connection. I don't think this is a book about hating marriage.
Sure, yeah.
I think actually like this marriage is the only thing keeping her kind of within, like connected to society and not like in that motel room forever.
It's just like, what does that transformation do for
yeah.
like, us? Or like, what am I supposed to take away from that? I sort of said this earlier, but just like the deconstructing of these, like, of what marriage is supposed to look like, you know, like, I get it, you know, like, but yeah, I mean, as a child of divorce with like two step parents, I do fundamentally like, I don't understand this, which is hard for me. And honestly, I'm a little apprehensive to try and understand it.
Fair.
As a reader, especially when it is just so about sex for her. And really, it didn't seem that way for him. Just felt like, I don't know, it made me very uncomfortable at times. And it also reminded me, I sort of spoke about this when on our No Country episode, sort of the sexual fantasies and temptations. It's like, Eyes Wide Shut, I'm going to talk about it again. But it's like, basically, he's just out. His wife admits to having this sexual fantasy, and then he goes on this journey of just, you know, illustrious, you know, tempting people all night, but he doesn't have an affair because the world is evil or whatever. And I guess I was just sort of struggling with how female desire was either neglected versus male desire, and how she, you know, like she initiates, they sleep in different bedrooms. I felt like if I'm reading a book and she wants to sleep with this one guy, she feels connected with him on a different plane. And then I get the next chapter is she goes home, sleeps in a different room as her husband. They don't talk at dinner. It's like, I think you're lying to yourself.
Yeah,
she totally is.
I think that this person is lying to themselves. And I don't think that the book says really anything, implies anything of that. They're just sort of like, think.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree.
Amorphously, just think about this. And it's like, well, I guess that's not why I read books.
There's at one point Jordy says to her, she goes, if you were a French man, you'd be great. And I actually think that that has a lot to say about the novel, where like, I think we hate her more almost because one of the characterization, but I also think low key, it's because of like a double standard. And not to say that any of us here are like misogynists, but more to say that like, I think one, her unlikableness is played up, especially in conversations with Harris. We see her as having obligations more so than I think we would see male characters, typically. And the neglect of those obligations, we want to shame her. We really do. And she does deserve it for many of the things. But I think this feeling of like there are not enough consequences for her, which I think is a fair feeling. She does kind of get off scot-free at the end. Is also like a... it comes from a patriarchal place, I do think. And I'm not justifying her as a character, but more saying our reaction to her isn't entirely unbiased.
Well, I just think my reaction is colored more by the fact that they can't have a conversation about it.
That's fair.
You have to role play it out through sex, through a sexual fantasy.
But then
like,
they're
a coward.
They do.
Like, you're a coward. I'm sorry. Even if that was a male character, like,
yeah.
You need to talk things through. If she had just said, if she had been honest and said, I need X, Y, and Z, and I have found it through this experience.
She does not have the idea to do it. She needs help, genuinely. Like,
yeah, right. But I'm saying, like, I don't think that I think that definitely in general, that is definitely a double standard. That is very clear. But I think that this book is a little more complicated than that. And I think that the sexual promiscuity is definitely supposed to color our vision. But I think through reading the book and understanding, like, her sexual drive a little bit more, you understand her in that respect, because that's the only thing we can understand. It's the only thing she talks about.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I was thinking. I think that the fact that they didn't talk about it says something
But
more
they,
about their communication.
after they role play, they eventually end up talking about it again. Like, not in a role play scenario. Like, they start off, that conversation is brokered by the role playing of the stalker. But then eventually that ends and they kind of break it. And she goes, and he goes, did you, when you were in Monrovia, like, did you sleep with someone else? She's like, yeah. And then she doesn't tell him the whole story. She just tells him it was a woman, which is true, but, leaving a lot out. But I do think that there is a moment where she decides to be transparent.
I think it's only that line.
Hold
Yeah,
on, let me
I
go back.
agree. But I also want to say that I think everything you talk about with like the double standards, Jen, I completely agree in a sense, and I do think that that's what Miranda July was trying to put in this book. I don't think that that is what I got out of it, and I don't know if that was because of the characterization and position that Harris is in, where I think I struggle with her having all of these innate problems, where there's a lot of this imagery of like a barnacle on a boat or like a cyst or something where it's like this is the problem, and if I could just take that out surgically, then I would be fine. And I think that making her that really simple way of like, well, she just has problems. Well, she's just a sex addict. Like, I think that irritates me because of the way that we see Harris as being like almost a perfect husband in the sense that like in a lot of the ways that they're interacting, he's acting rationally, whereas she's not. And I know that that's trying to complicate the idea of patriarchy and that like we can't only have feminism for like perfect women, but it made it harder to read for me. I completely agree with that take. I think Harris is so wronged. And we also, he's not a full person. He's a two-dimensional character in this story,
Exactly.
totally.
There's no characterization of Harris. And I'm like, if we're gonna have this interplay in a marriage, I want to know what the other side is like.
I just felt like they were all so tropey.
Yeah.
You're all like her friends, especially
Yeah.
Julie, the voice on the phone. Like, I've read so many books where like there's an insert character like that. And I was just, and I liked Jordy's line about all fours. I thought that
Yeah.
was good. And I was just sort of like,
Should we read that line just so we
yeah,
get
let's do
it?
it. Yeah, you
Yeah.
guys have the
We
book.
got book. It's
Everyone thinks doggy style is so vulnerable, Jordy said, but it's actually the most stable position, like a table. It's hard to be knocked down when you're on all fours.
Yeah, so if you wrong everybody in your life, they won't get back at you? What? Yeah,
Yeah, what
I'm
did
just
you take
kidding. He's
out of
just like,
that?
I was just sort of like, okay, so if I'm stable
Which
and
she
like
never is. Yeah, I mean, like
it's a good idea.
Yeah. And I think that boils down to a lot of what I'm getting from this book is a lot of floating good ideas that I can't combine into like, this is what I'm taking away. Which,
Yeah.
Hannah, you've said a few times, but I think that's where I
I
struggle.
agree. I think I really want to like elements of this book because I think that the first part was a lot stronger to me than like the her returning home fell flat for me afterward.
Really?
That's kind of where things started to fall off for me in terms of my impression of like what the book was about. I was really intrigued by the trip, and I was intrigued by her redoing the motel room. I was intrigued by Davy as a character. I think he's fascinating. Besides, it's like the really objectively terrible thing where he's cheating on his wife with the protagonist. But the way that like her, we see the protagonist really as someone who like has a lot of fantasies, and so I kind of really believed that Davy was just being strung along at first. But he was so in it too, and he was there, and he was as like imaginative about this relationship as she was, and I don't know what that was trying to say, but that puzzled me. And then I felt like it tapered off, and we never really got to see why. I liked the beginning. I think I was hooked. I was disappointed, like Hannah, with the re relationship that she, the way she deals with, and the way the author writes her homecoming. And just those events, I think that that was not done with enough intention, and the writing didn't match what I was looking for, and wasn't really driving me. But I think that the conversation she has with Arkanda is really interesting. when they just say back and forth like a million times in this motel room, I can't believe this happened.
Yeah.
I think that felt really, like, that was super, and I wish there was honestly more of that in the novel. 100%. I think that if the book was way more focused on this period, I honestly really would love to have seen a chapter or something where it was just those 2 weeks or however long it was when her baby was in the NICU and they didn't know if he was going to make it or the child was going to make it or not.
Yeah.
Because I think that that is the most fascinating time she alludes to, and she has all these flashbacks to it. And I was so hooked on kind of the way that that transformed her and Harris's relationship.
Yeah.
And the events of this book.
It just feels so haphazardly thrown together. Yeah. Like, there are just so many moving parts. Like, we're talking about the pop star. We're talking about her queer. Yeah, right, her queer experience. We're talking about her, like, her location. There are just so many things going on. And, you know, we're talking about the almost stillbirth.
Yeah.
She's just like, I don't feel as if I'm left wanting more. I just feel like it's absent, you know?
On page,
there's a difference.
So sorry. On page 300, I was like, okay, so we're going to have to get Davy back here, and we're going to have to get her and Arconda in a room. Like, that's what's going to have to happen before this book ends.
And it does.
And then it does. And I was like, okay, but in my mind, I was like, I mean, that's how they're going to tie it up, but it doesn't feel like that has any relevance anymore because we've gone so far off the deep end.
And also something just about sort of Davy and us seeing this younger man, older woman relationship. I mean, like, baby girl came out. Saw baby girl twice in theater.
I think he's 15 years younger than her, something like that. He's, like, in his 30s and she's 45.
Yeah, 46. I was just saying, like, a relationship with that sort of an age difference. Yeah. Just that, I mean, that's a big part of what this... of what their colors, their affair, is the fact that there's this age difference. And so in referencing that, I guess I just, I didn't feel the follow through with what I was supposed to think of, just like, wow, look at these two different people from different, you know, like...
different walks of life.
It's just like, okay, love is love. Yeah, I get it, you know? I guess I just wasn't getting anything beyond that, which, like, other narratives that portray those relationships and affairs, I feel like I've gotten more from. Even Baby Girl, it's like, mm-hmm. it's talking about sort of neglected female desire and satisfaction. Mm-hmm. This, I wasn't sure if that was what was going on. I think it was just, like, an absence in her life.
Here's my take, and you guys might yell at me for giving too much credit to the author, and that would be totally fair. But I think that their attraction, there is just this, like, okay, you have these adults who are dealing with marriages and lives and careers and ambitions, and it is so overwhelming to them that the feeling of, like, true present intimacy and vulnerability, like, you know, 2 week long, I think, like, sexual affair, but without the sex. And I think that, like, they're literally holding each other. Like, in ways, it feels almost like, there are moments where it feels almost paternal from one to the other.
Yeah.
Like, where it's, like, almost like nurse to patient. Like, especially when they do the weird thing in the bathroom, she's, like, catching his pee. Like, that's really weird. Yeah, and the tampon stuff. He changes her tampon. I think it's, like, it's just a cry for, like, get me out of my life, because it is so, it's too huge for who I am as a person.
I agree. I just, yeah. No, and what I was saying about that earlier is just, like, I don't know what, like, like, there's no discourse in the novel.
It's just saying that is, I guess. And I don't know if that's definitely not satisfying as a reader.
I guess I just wouldn't give... I think, you're giving the book more credit than I think I did and do.
That's totally fair.
Yeah, no, I just...
She wanted us to read into it. Yeah. And here we are reading into it.
And I think that there's the shock value of the book, a lot of parts of it.
Yeah.
And I think part of the writing of this book is just putting that on the page. And I don't know if we need to love that or like that, but I think that is what she kind of, that was the goal, is just to write these things down and, like, show it to an audience. And, you know, whether our reaction is horror or, you know, self-reflection or just, like, shock or disgust, I think the intent is just that it's there.
Right. When did this come out? When was this published?
May 2024, I think.
Wow.
Yes. That makes sense.
Fact checked, correct from Dylan.
I love it.
How would you rate this, Jen?
Yeah, give us a rating.
Oh, God. Wait, do we do stars? Do we do numbers? What do we want to do? Yeah. Ooh, whatever. I think I want to talk about this with more people. Yeah. But I don't know if I'd recommend it. I would love to teach this in, like, a history class. Like, that teachers would be taught this about, like, the current, like, Roe v. Wade moment. I think that would be a fascinating conversation about, like, the current state of feminism and how that's related, like, related literature. Mm-hmm. And also just, like, the political nature of our time and kind of the ways that people react to, like, you know, like, this very, like, open queer community has all these problems in this book. And I think it speaks a lot to the problems that are in the present that I think in an interesting way that I'd love to talk about. I don't know if I would definitely never recommend this to like my mom. But I don't think I'd recommend this to most people unless I just wanted to chat. Like I'm going to make Dylan, my boyfriend, read this, not Dylan, the producer, just because I would love to talk about it with him. Mm-hmm, it's absolutely a chatty book.
Yeah. I'm going to have to do a star rating out of 10. For me personally, this is a me personally star rating. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 10. But that doesn't mean that not everyone can get something really interesting out of this book.
Can you do a comp 3? Like, what's a 3 that you think is like this?
I don't know that I've read anything like this before.
But, like, the vibe, because, like, the scale is weird to me, because I think there are books I think of that are 3s, but that are completely different books.
Give me a 3. Like, I know, it's hard.
I don't know. I don't give many books 3s. I love books, and it hurts me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that for me personally, my enjoyment of it might have been a 3.
Fair, and I totally respect.
Yeah. Hannah, what's your rating?
I was just going to say, on what you said, see, this is a book that I would immediately recommend to my mom.
Wow.
Because she's like, she would eat this up right now. I think I would probably err on 3.5.
Okay.
I don't think, yeah, probably a 3. I was going to say 3, and then I was like, maybe I should not just say exactly what Sam just said. But you know what? I agree with you, and I also think it's a 3. You know, we're seeing the sort of cracks within an open, inclusive sort of queer community, this very 21st century community.
And like very like post-pandemic community.
Yeah, I guess I just wonder if readers will see that. If they'll see this as dysfunctional or if they'll see it as, at least young people, if they'll see it as sort of a reading of this sort of dysfunction and good parts, or if they're just going to be like, this woman, look at what she did. I just think that the book isn't clear enough.
That's totally
for readers
agreed.
To, you know, walk that line. So I guess that's why I would also give it, like, I would be apprehensive to recommend.
That's where I'm at. Thank you guys so much for listening, and thank you for having me on.
This was lovely.
And before you go, a little question.
A little query, if you will. I'm ready.
Like a troll in front of a bridge.
Query 3 for ye.
Go for it. Well,
I love that. Okay, this is our CMU question.
Okay.
Which building on campus has the best vibe?
Oh my God. That is the toughest question ever. I will say.
Not Doherty.
No, God. There's buildings I can immediately say no. I have a home in Baker. I think my experience in Baker is special because I have access to the press office and I have the GLAD. I think if that was another major, I'm not sure how I feel about this building. But to me, it has the best vibe because the English majors are here and we're the best majors on campus.
You're me,
Sammy.
Would it be crazy to say Hunt Library? Like Hunt.
That would be crazy.
No, I love Hunt.
I love Defer. Yeah. I don't love Hunt.
Defer. I see so many, like, people I walk in, I feel like a celebrity. I'm like, hey. To, like, all of my besties.
Oh, actually, I totally lied. This isn't a building. I have a better answer.
Go for it. Yeah.
The Hill by the tennis courts. That's the best place on campus.
Oh, wow.
The tennis courts, yeah.
Okay. Hannah?
Oh, Baker. I live here.
same thing. Remember to follow us on Instagram, @CMUBooked. Reach out if you want to be a guest, or is there a better way they can reach out to us? Just write a note on a brick and throw it through my window.
Maybe don't damage property.
Don't damage property, but, you know, it's important.
Just don't get caught. Bye.
Bye. Bye.